Okay, so welcome everyone to our final conclusive session on our discussion of giving and accepting shelter. Actually, there's almost no need even to give out the fifth lesson because we're not going to talk about any of the points. The fifth lesson, I've just put something additional together, what can be discussed or something. But we really, since we have limited time also, we want to just concentrate on two things, actually, two final points that we want to look a little bit more at the etiquette. That's where we finished off this morning. And then, really, how to practically start and develop a bit of a supportive structure to help us to cultivate these principles of giving and accepting shelter. So let's begin with the etiquette. So first of all, the etiquette is very clear and strict. Men are taking shelter of men, women are taking shelter of women. There's no room for a man giving shelter to a woman except his wife. That's the way it is. Very clear. Especially as a brahmachari, one is not supposed to give guidance to ladies and all these kind of things. And even as a grihastha, as I mentioned once, you know, butter is butter, whether it's saffron butter or yellow butter or white butter or old butter or young butter. Butter is butter, fire is fire. So if the two come too close, then the butter melts. Yeah, so in the same way, the other way around, some elderly ladies giving guidance and shelter to young boys also, there's no room for this. I think I once shared that I know one example where she is 30 years older than he, than they're married. You know, she's 27, he is 27, she is 57. So, you know, these kind of things start when we don't follow the etiquette. And then there's some attachment developing and all this. And some unfulfilled needs. He's got unfulfilled needs. She has unfulfilled needs. And then, oh, the two attract each other like magnets there and become emotionally attached to each other. And even though from an intellectual point they might see, oh, this actually is stupid. This has no future here. But because of the attachment, they can't pull out anymore. And they just have to go along with it. So we've had this so many times and we don't want to have it in the future. No need to repeat all the same mistakes. So that's the basic thing. Men give shelter to men, women give shelter to women. And it's very obvious that one also sticks to one's ashram, actually. That grihasthas naturally take shelter of grihasthas. Right? So a grihastha man, if he takes shelter of a brahmachari, well, usually a brahmachari doesn't really have the insights into all different things of family life. All right, he can speak theoretically from, you know, 7th canto, 14th chapter, idea of family life or something, but he also doesn't want to, you know, get involved in family difficulties. It's not his mindset. And the same the other way around. Obviously, a brahmachari, you know, if he takes guidance of the grihastha, well, it can be if he was a brahmachari for 15 years or something and he knows very well what it means to be a brahmachari. But it's just natural that a brahmachari takes shelter of a brahmachari, grihastha takes shelter of a grihastha, renunciate takes shelter of a renunciate. Right? So a renunciate doesn't take shelter of a grihastha because a grihastha doesn't really know the ins and outs of life and the renounced phase of life or something. So that's very natural, really. So now one thing is, unmarried ladies usually take shelter of a grihastha couple, actually. especially also in the Brahmacharini Ashram, because Brahmacharini Ashram actually means it is preparation for Grihastha life. And I think worldwide in ISKCON we are understanding more and more how important it actually is for ladies to get married. There's only very few exceptions where this is not so important, maybe because the person has been going through married life before they joined or something. But as a rule, it's just Krishna system. That's the way it is. You know, that a young, pretty girl usually, you know, she's desiring to have a husband and she needs to be protected. And yeah, it's just the way it is, and women have more emotional needs and so on, and they're best fulfilled in family life and so on. So actually I described this also in this book, that it actually starts at very young age, that a girl is looking for her prince to give her heart to. Starts with 6-7 years of age. The girls talk about getting married. I remember from my own childhood, I always had my favorite boy I wanted to marry when I was 6 or 7 at school. And I asked my mother, how do you find a husband, before I entered school? I remember. Yeah, this starts very early, and this is built in. It comes along with the woman's body, just so the woman receives the protection she's meant to get. Yeah, it's a whole big topic, which we don't want to get into it now, but you know, in the book I'm talking quite a bit about that. You know, so, and I always observe, and I hope nobody minds me saying this, but I do observe that if a woman has never been married, there is a couple of results of that. That for one, her ego is pretty strong because she doesn't have that daily practice and opportunity on a daily basis to take the humble position. Yeah, it's just the way it is. That's the main purifying thing of married life, actually, that we women learn to subdue and dissolve the ego. We practice on the husband on a daily basis. So, and if that a woman doesn't have that, then the ego is very prominent. And that there is some risk that in our next life we get a man's body. And then we can dominate and do that as a purifying duty. So in any case, and it took us many years to realize this, actually. And in some parts of the world, it's more realized than in other parts of the world. But that realization is becoming more and more clear, actually. And also, women usually are, Prabhupada says it all in the Bhagavatam, that women have that tendency to be self-interested. And there's also a reason for that. So she can be a good caregiver. She has to be self-interested. What I need for my kids and my husband. And if that self-interest is not used in family life to serve family, then we women easily become grossly selfish, actually. It's just all I, me, and my, what suits me. So these are all good enough reasons, you know, for us women to be married. At least for some part of our life. Let's leave it up to Krishna. So I was married for 10 years, but oh, without that experience, I would never be where I'm now, you know. I cannot even imagine my life without that experience. So, yeah, so in any case, as a rule, we see Brahmacharini life as preparation to married life, actually. And that's why it is advisable for young unmarried girls to accept counselors who are grihasthas. And there, the wife is her counselor. And all right, she's got a husband also who is there in the background. And sometimes, if required, you know, he can give the male rational view to things or something. But her counselor is his wife, not him. We've also had that. So she is the counselor. And she might sometimes take some advice from her husband, or her husband might give his things, view to things. And it's a similar thing for unmarried men who don't want to become brahmacharis. If they want to, you know, go towards brahmachari life, then of course they should accept a brahmachari as a counselor. But if they are not so interested or inclined for brahmachari life, they should also accept a grihastha couple. That's how we practice it in Ukraine and Chaupari. And I mean, it's not that we have to do it like this, but why not take example of, you know, a model that works, right? So usually that's how we do it in Ukraine also and Chaupari. So the unmarried boys who don't want to go direction brahmachari life, they also accept the grihastha couple. And of course, there the husband is his counselor. And all right, she's got a wife too there. And if there's some need, then she can give the motherly view and vision on things or something. That's usually how it works in regards to etiquette. Yeah, so very important that we really stick to these etiquettes. Very important. You know, if we had situations where, you know, this was not so clear and the young girls accepted him as their counselor, and actually, well, unfortunately, he's got a wife too there, but it would be much better if he didn't or something. She's actually disturbing a bit or something. So, oh my God, then the whole thing already has some wrong twist to it. Then obviously something is not quite right here. And as I mentioned this morning, it is also the man's nature that he wants to give shelter to a woman. It's built into the male vehicle. And as I also mentioned, most men, only very brahminical men, they don't need that feminine energy to be inspired. So sometimes we find this, that men like to preach to women and take care of them and guide them, but actually they're pinching a few drops of that feminine energy there. I'm also describing that in the book. You can read up of it, on it more in detail. So yeah, this is, you know, not proper, you know. So if he wants to give shelter to a woman, he should accept a wife and give her shelter. And even if he is married, you know, sometimes men like to give shelter to more than one wife, to other women also, but it's not recommended. We have had too many bad experiences in this, you know. I mean, yeah, I think I mentioned it, how in the early days the temple president was in charge of the brahmacharinis. Didn't work very nicely. So many times, you know, he started having a whole thing with one of the brahmacharinis, left his wife and kids and walked out with a brahmacharini. So this is just the result of not following the etiquette properly. So there's no room for these things. Especially because mentorship is really a more daily, regular relationship. This regularity, this is really what brings attachment, you know. And also for a woman, that's the thing. You know, it's so built into the woman's body that she needs, she's looking for that man to follow and give her heart to and so on. So naturally, if a man offers himself as a protector, she will immediately get attached. Of course. You know? So, no room for this. All right, so do we have any question on this before we start with more how we actually begin to develop a whole supportive structure? Any comments? I mean, we have to clearly understand these Vaishnava etiquette rules, they're actually meant to protect us. They're meant to protect us from these broken heart experiences. Yeah? They're for our own benefit. They're not there to spoil our fun or something, but they're there for, to protect, you know. Vandana Swami always says, in the material world, we give our heart away and we get burned, and we give it away and we get burned, and we give it away and we get heartbroken. But in spiritual life, Krishna's system so nicely protects us from all these broken heart experiences. Yeah, it works very nicely. Like, materialistic culture is a culture of abandoning each other. Husband abandons wife, wife abandons husband, parents abandon children, children abandon parents and grandparents. So everybody abandons each other for the sake of sense gratification. Yeah? But spiritual culture is a culture of protection and care. I see it in Bangladesh. We are also traumatized with these experiences of being abandoned. That's why it's often so difficult for us to enter marriage, because we're so afraid of once again being abandoned and hurt and all that. But in Bangladesh, people don't have that experience. They don't know what it's like to be abandoned. The husband doesn't abandon wife, wife doesn't abandon husband, parents don't abandon the children, and the children don't abandon parents. So they don't even know what it means to be abandoned and heartbroken. They don't have that experience. Yeah, it's a whole different approach to life if you're not traumatized by all these experiences of broken heart and being abandoned, you know. Yes. So the culture really protects us from this, you know. Yes. Unmarried woman taking shelter in a vanaprastha couple. Well, if she is in that stage of life that she wants to, you know, go towards the renounced phase of life, yeah, definitely. Definitely. But she takes shelter of her, not of him. Yeah, definitely. Yes. Yeah, I mean, any elderly woman who, you know, doesn't want to get married again, that's always the point. We should actually, as far as possible, we should ask ourselves, which ashram do I want to, you know, go, in which direction? No need to invent a fifth ashram, some bachelor ashram or something. Like in Ukraine, we call it domachari. Doma is home, you know. Domachari. Okay. Okay, so equivalent. Yeah, so no need for this, you know, either or. Yeah, so if an elderly woman who is not married for whatever reason and definitely doesn't want to be married, and also her, you know, some senior person can see she doesn't need to be married, then definitely she should either take, you know, shelter of a vanaprastha couple who work as a team, or a renounced lady who has no husband, who is more like a widow. We discussed in the women's ashram. I don't see myself as a vanaprastha, because there's actually husband and wife working as a team, vanaprastha. So I'm a widow. My husband is spiritually dead and gone. So, widow. Yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, saying that Brahmacharini should take shelter of a grihastha couple, it of course doesn't mean that other single ladies cannot guide them or arrange their services. Usually, of course, Brahmacharini, we usually have a single lady taking care of the girls, you know, and arrange their services and this and that. But that could also be seen more like a managerial function. Right? And of course, even, let's say, even as a head pujari, you know, you still also care a little bit about your devotees there serving in your department or something. You're not just all callous and only managerially orientated. So naturally, you also, you know, care about them and show some interest in their spiritual life, and some might accept that person as a counselor if it falls into the categories of ashram and this and that. But then for some, it might be more a managerial function, and they might rather want to have a counselor which is not the head pujari or something. So in the same way, you know, a single lady who takes care of the Brahmacharini ashram, it's often single, sometimes it's also married people, but often it's single people because they live with them or nearby or something. So then that's could be seen more as a managerial function. But it also depends, you know, if that person has had an experience in married life, and hopefully a good one, then she will encourage the young girls to get married. But very easily, it's in a subtle way, if that person has never had an experience in married life or not a very good one, then in a subtle way, even unconsciously, it can be discouraging to the girls to get married. And then this is, not such good guidance. I mean, just for your interest, when I started going to Ukraine, that's, you know, 18 years ago or something, they really checked me out before they allowed me to come and preach there. The leaders, they knew these things, and they were really checking me out whether I understand the importance of women getting married. You know, they asked me all different things, and they were really testing me. And then when they realized, yeah, she fully encourages the girls to get married, then they allowed me to preach there. So that's you know, that's how strict. They don't allow, you know, any woman there to come and preach if they don't understand this point. Chuta Priya Prabhu, the regional secretary, is very protective over his yatra, you know. Yeah, and it's good, you know, it's good. Yes. Okay, so yeah, time is going. Let's move on to the question of how we start. So the way we usually start is that we identify within let me conclude that. So obviously the main and foremost counselors come from the section of the Grihasthas, right? Understanding that the single ladies should have Grihastha couples, the single men who don't want to be brahmacharis should have Grihastha couples, the Grihasthas should have Grihastha couples. So obviously the main portion of counselors, they come, you know, they're stable, exemplary, experienced Grihastha couples. They are your main counselors. Because as we said, it's so important that that a caregiver is healthily established in his ashram, and so it's mainly Grihastha couples. And also there, let's say there's a Grihastha couple where the husband is really into it, he really wants to be a counselor, and the wife is not really much active and it's not her nature and maybe she's not so qualified or whatever. So what to do? Well, we usually do like that, then that he can, yes, he can be a counselor, but he's just going to have a men's group. He doesn't have any women there. If his wife doesn't, you know, he's not part of the team. He can't have any women there. It's just a men's group. Or same the other way around. If the wife is really into it and, you know, she really likes to reach out to the ladies and give guidance and. But the husband, he's just not interested and he's busy with his profession and so on. So same thing. Yes, she can have a group, but it's just the ladies then. No men there, obviously. So, and the way we started is, that's how we do it in Ukraine. Again, it's not, this is the only way, but it's a good way and it works. We've tested it over more than 15 years and it's very successful, really. I mean, Ukraine, wow, it's such a strong yatra. You've ever visited there, Peru? No? Yeah, you should come and check it out. Yeah, pretty, very nice. So, the way they start is that they identify within a community the possible mentors, the possible caregivers. You know, you've got the list of qualifications. All right, we might not be all in all respects, you know, qualified and ideal. But those couples where you can see, yeah, you know, if they actually continue and if they desire to qualify themselves, they can become qualified. So you identify them, and the counselors, the possible counselors, they meet regularly, ideally once a week. Only Shravanam Kirtanam, nothing else. They establish their relationships on the basis of hearing from each other and chanting together and, yeah, just some little sangha thing. Not a long, big thing, just an hour, 1.5 hours in somebody's home, not in the temple. Temple is always a bit official and informal, you know, but in a person's home, they can take turns. They should do that anyway. You know, that's the way of Vaishnav social life, to get together in a home to read something. You know, there can be some systematic reading of some book. Everybody reads a chapter during the week and then one person gives a 10-minute presentation and summary and some discussion and some chanting together and some Prabhupada nectar or whatever, you know. It doesn't even matter so much what you do. Main thing is it has to be based on some solid shastra. Otherwise, it's just some get-together and one talks and talks pujalpa or something. So, you know, there has to be some proper spiritual structure there. And in that way, they develop their relationships so that there is a common, you know, a spirit of let's do something for our community. And as we emphasized, equal association is so important, especially for the caregivers. So that should go on until really there's a good team spirit and there's some trusting and affectionate relationships, because also we said that the caregivers have to be sheltered first before they actually can give shelter. They have to have a mentor first. And one can find shelter amongst, you know, equals, and, you know, even equals, there's always somebody a little bit stronger and a little bit more experienced than we are, and. So I have that experience that devotees share, how much shelter such kind of sangha gives amongst the caregivers. Yes. So that's usually how we start. And that can go on for a year or something. No rush. Yes, and ideally they should meet every week. That's best. But all right, if everybody's too busy, okay, every 2 weeks, but not less than every 2 weeks. If it's only once a month, that's only 12 times a year, and then there's festivals and this thing and that thing. So, I mean, that's already not serious. That's the thing. Being a caregiver, one has to you know, sacrifice oneself. So if one doesn't even find the time to meet once every 2 weeks, oh, well, then forget it, you know. Then obviously the person is not ready to make a sacrifice. The person is not understands how important this is. If you can't even get it together to come for a little program once every 2 weeks or something. You know? And I mean, if we make it short and sweet, you know, then it's not such a big thing, you know. All right, there should be a little prasadam snack, but it doesn't have to be a big feast and all this. We shouldn't eat a big feast in the evening anyway. So it should just be a little snack, you know. So, and really, this is Vaishnav life, to receive some devotees in one's home, have some kirtan, have some discussion. You know, that's Vaishnav social life should go on every day and all over the place in all different houses. Yeah, so that's how we start. So, and then after the relationships are more established amongst the seniors and there is some sense of shelter there also, even though, of course, the shelter givers, they can also have sheltering relationships in Zagreb or whatever, you know. Whoever they know, you know, doesn't have to be a local thing. But in any case, on that level we start. And everybody has to, ask himself, so who is my mentor? Where is my sheltering relationship, you know? And only then we can actually give shelter to others if we are sheltered ourselves. So that's why we have to start on the top there. And if there's affectionate and harmonious relationships amongst the seniors who are giving shelter, then that, you know, that harmony filters down through the whole yatra. But if on the top level there's all tension and competitiveness and all this, oh well, then that filters down through the whole yatra. Right? Yes, very important, you know, that there's harmony and cooperation on the top level, you know. And we were saying that it's so difficult, the equal association and so on. If we don't start building these relationships amongst the caregivers first, then very easily we get a system of independent leaders, some political parties with their following, right? So that's why there has to be, you know, strong, close, trusting, affectionate relationships. Trusting. Yes. Otherwise this possessiveness comes in, oh, he's my mentee and my follower and all this, you know? Yeah, because also sometimes, so, yes, anyway, because you know, the mentors have to cooperate. You know, there might be one person where one mentor doesn't know really, and then he can say, "Oh, maybe you take that person in your group or something." You know, and that, so there has to be some exchange and some cooperation for the interest and upliftment of everybody in the yatra. So that's why we have to start there on the top level. So and then when, you know, that, as I said, that can take a year or even longer or whatever it takes to build the bridges there and qualify everybody and, you know. So, and then after some time, you know, the caregivers, they start having their own group. Actually, a caregiver should have, you know, a program every week, actually. Yes, yes. That's how we started. We don't make a post and say, here they are the counselors, and if you have a problem, you can ring them or something. No, that's completely artificial. That there has to be an opportunity for people to get to know this person and build a trusting relationship on the platform of Shravanam Kirtanam. That's the way how to do it. Yes. And these two platforms of programs go on parallel. So when the mentors, they have their weekly program, then that the program amongst the caregivers is every 2 weeks. They meet every 2 weeks, and every caregiver meets with their group every week. That's how they practice it in Ukraine. And also Chapari also, you know? Yes. You understand? So, and then, you know, these programs which every caregiver gives, they should be open for everybody. Also for new people. It's a fantastic system to pull in new people immediately into a whole network of care, right? That at the Sunday program, you look for the new people and you tell them, oh, by the way, we have. You don't have to talk about mentors and shelter and this and that. You just tell people, so there's some house programs going on this place, that place, the other place, so why don't you come and check it out? Because in a homey atmosphere, their people develop more trusting relationships. You visit that person's home and you hear from that person. And also, you know, the mentor is just facilitating the program. It doesn't mean he gives a lecture there every time or something. No. You know, you simply go through some topics or something, and the mentor delegates, okay, would you like to give a little presentation, 10 minutes on this and this topic by using this and this material? And then there's some discussion, and then there's, you change up for one round, and then there's some Prabhupada nectar, or, you know, and kirtan, of course, in the beginning and the end, whatever, you know, this is pretty flexible. It's almost a little bit like a bhakti riksha program or something, you know, it's just, yeah, and the mentor is facilitating and inviting the more senior devotees in his group to do something. It's not that he just gives a lecture there every time or something. No. So, and yeah, and then, like new people or people who have not accepted a mentor, they can visit different groups, you know, for a couple of months they join that one group, then they check out the other group and the third group. And sooner or later they know where they feel the most comfortable, where they fit in best, where they can connect to the mentor the best, you know. And then there's that element of friendship between those who have the same mentor in the group, right? So, and then you settle, sooner or later you settle for one group, but you have that opportunity to check everybody out, where you have most trusting feeling towards and who inspires you the most or something. Yeah, that's how it starts. Right? So, and then if you go there every week and take part in that group, then it becomes the most natural thing that you then say, ah, Prabhu or Mataji, can I talk to you sometime? I want to discuss something privately with you. And then you make an appointment, all right, come tomorrow, or whatever, you know. And it becomes very natural, because there's a relationship there, there's some trust there. You meet every week in a program. And that program has to be a spiritual program, Shravanam Kirtanam, not just some, you know, ventilating some grievances and anger or whatever, you know. The personal things has to be discussed outside of the program, not in that program. The program is really Shravanam Kirtanam. Yeah, so that's how we do it. And it's a fantastic way how to involve new people. Because if such a system is not there, sometimes new people, they come for years and they don't connect really in friendship, you know. Especially if the yatra becomes a little bigger, you can feel pretty lonely there the first time in the temple. You don't know anybody. Maybe nobody gives you even much attention. And you don't even know how to offer your food or something. It can take a few years until you catch up. Oh, I'm meant to offer my food. You know, it can happen. Can happen. In a big yatra especially. Like Kiev, you get 800 people coming for the Sunday program. So, you can feel pretty lonely there if you don't know anybody. So, but like that, you immediately can be pulled into some, you know, home program, and then the devotees in that group, they see, oh, a new person is coming, okay, and they make friends, and I'll show you how to do this and that, and they visit the person's home, help up to set it up an altar, and you know, so there's a whole thing, you know, or talk to the parents when there's some objection that they come to the Hare Krishnas, and so on, you know, so there's a whole supportive system there. Yeah, that's, I mean, makes all sense, doesn't it? Yeah. And you have, at the same time, these home programs, you know, the Shravanam Kirtanam in people's homes. Whole package. Yeah, that's how to start. So, and then when, you know, the group gets bigger and bigger, then, yeah, you know, the mentor looks maybe for somebody who could be an assistant who he can train up, right? He might have one senior couple in his group who've been coming for many years. And so then he, you know, he takes that couple as an assistant. So, and then sooner or later, they can start their group if the group gets too big, you know. But we don't really emphasize, like in the Bhakti Viksha program, that's a very strong emphasis, this, you know, the cells are dividing and we have more groups and more groups and more groups. No, council system is not into spreading. That's not the mood, you know, to have more and more and more groups. No, no, no. The group stays as much together, but if it's just getting too big, you know, if it's 50 people or something, then, yeah, well, that's how it gets in Ukraine, you know, then there's 45, or in Chaupati, there's 45, 50 people, and it's just getting a little too much, and the counselor just cannot give that personal attention to so many people in his group. So then he has to, you know, divide the group. You know, yes. So, any questions? Yeah, I mean, I'm really hoping that you can somehow fine-tune your system. What do you have there? You know. Or maybe just start again and really look to your community for the stable, solid, exemplary grihasthas and just start meeting with them. And of course, brahmachari counselors should also be there, or renunciate counselors should also be there. It's not only grihasthas, but obviously grihasthas are the majority, because most of the devotees should accept grihastha couples as mentors. So they will be the majority, obviously. But in that meeting amongst the counselors, that's not only for grihasthas, it's anybody from any ashram who falls into that category of being a possible caregiver. Yeah. Yeah, it might be best even to start again. Start fresh and meet. And then after a while, that the counselors have their groups, you know. And yeah, I mean, usually very, very naturally somebody evolves there or manifests who is really willing to sacrifice some energy for this, you know, who really recognizes how important this is and who wants to make this contribution to the yatra by serving like that. And he naturally, you know, becomes kind of the main person type thing, who is coordinating things and taking care of the counselors and looking who is really qualified, and, you know, like that. And who can even travel? That's what we have in Ukraine. We have one Grihastha couple, and they travel all around Ukraine and inspire devotees in that and guide them and, you know, have meetings with the counselors and give them advice how to deal in different situations. And they travel all around Ukraine and inspire the system. And then Ranjit Swami, he introduced 2 times a year, I think, at least it was 2 times a year, yeah. He introduced a counselor retreat where all the caregivers and aspiring caregivers, the assistant caregivers, they come for a long weekend to Kiev and they have all kinds of seminars there, 2 times a year. It's about 300 people or something who are involved in caring, you know? Yes. And on one of those retreats, he himself is there just to inspire people that they come and take this seriously. You know, he himself is there. And on the other retreat, they often invite Sridharam and Kishori Mataji from Chaupati. Have they visited here, Sridharam? Yes. Yeah, so they go regularly there. I don't know if they're still going, but they have been going regularly to this retreat and they give all kinds of presentations and tools, you know, different things on empathic listening and celebrating the success of your counselor, how to have this mood of, you know, pushing people up higher than you self are. And all kinds of things which are useful for caregiver and mentor to know, you know. Yeah, so obviously if you have such kind of retreats, that really highlights it, you know. It's like having Sankirtan festival, book distribution, or book distribution katar and celebration. And so that highlights it and emphasizes it. So if you have a similar thing in regards to mentorship, you know, that highlights it, that reminds everybody of this important mission and you know. Yeah. So so the question is, I mentioned to you privately that one can have a mentor on all different levels, you know? It's having sheltering relationship is not restricted to one only or something, but it's advisable to have at least a local one, because the local mentor can see us more, how we're practicing, how is our sadhana, how are we cooperating with the devotees, and. But then there can also be somebody in another yatra in the same country or in the neighboring country who we sometimes meet or something. Or there can be somebody on the other side of the world who we sometimes meet or whatever, you know. Yeah, it is possible, but a local one should have too. Because often it's very convenient to have a mentor who is never there, because he doesn't see then how we're doing, you know? So that's why it's always recommended, as far as possible, to really have somebody local. And what topics we discuss with them, well, that's an individual thing, you know? Some topics we might feel they are so, you know, important and touchy or something that we want to discuss that with a person who is maybe, more qualified than the local devotees, more experienced or something, you know. So then we might rather want to turn to, you know, somebody in another place for that or something. But as I mentioned to you privately, one should not play them out against each other. You know, one should not have many mentors with that idea that hopefully I will get the answer from one of them which I want. And if I don't get the advice of my local one which I want to hear, then all right, let me ask another one. Maybe I get it from him, and okay, let me ask another one. So that should not be the mood of, you know, of having several mentors or something. I mean, in one sense, it's similar like gurus. You know, we have a Diksha guru, but then there's also room for so many Shiksha personalities too. It's not just restricted to one guru only or something. And we get some inspiration in one thing from one personality and from another person or something. So a similar thing is there on that level of mentorship, you know, that there can also be room for several. But then again, we can also say, and that also applies for guru relationship, it's hard enough to develop one trusting relationship, so let's just concentrate on one. Or not have too many which are not so deep and more superficial or something. Because we have only so much time and energy left in our life apart from our service and this and that. And to develop any deeper relationship requires some effort and some, you know, some endeavor. Yes. What else? Yes?
About establishing mentorship system, who should do it, and what can we do? What can we do for it to help establish?
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned previously, you know, caregivers, mentors are not self-appointed. There should be somebody more senior and, you know, and experienced and balanced who can see a little bit, who meets those criteria. And that person should help choosing, you know. I don't know who your senior most people are. Ananta Prabhu and Ukuma Prabhu or something, you know. So just the more senior devotees get together and you know, go through the whole yatra there and look who could be qualifying for that. And some people will drop out, you know, some people will not want to sacrifice themselves. That's why we were saying this spirit of sacrificing oneself for the benefit and upliftment of others with this genuine concern for them, that's one of the most important qualifications. So this will already become evident that some people will just not have that mood of sacrificing themselves. That's also a good, that's another good reason why it's good to start on the top level, because you will see, you know, who is actually making it first priority, who is coming every week, who is taking this seriously, you know. So then obviously there's really more deeper interest there, because also here, Puriji, you were asking, or you know, is it the nature of giving care, or maybe one wants some followers or this or that. And so, yeah, like in any service, there's two kinds of motivations. There's material motivation, ego motivation. One wants to show off and be the great person or something, or have the followers. But then there is the pure servant motivation that we have in all services. And of course, also in regards to being a mentor, there can also be the material ego motivation that, oh yes, I want to be a big mentor here and have so many people I'm taking care of and look at me and all that. Or there can be the pure servant motivation. So this will be very easily also exposed type thing by starting with this meeting of the mentors, because how long can you fake it to be so enthusiastic or something? You know, in the equal association, it will become more evident whether it is an ego thing or whether there's a genuine interest to serve the devotees, right? Because if our motive is ego-driven, then sooner or later there will be clashes with the equals, right? Make sense? Yes. Yes, so that's another good reason why to start like that for quite a while and develop good relationships and you know. Yes. Yeah, so obviously some senior devotees have to take some interest in this topic. And they have to inspired, and we have to recognize how important this is. That's what the whole seminar was about, you know, the first few sessions, to just from all different sides, trying to convince ourselves that actually, without these sheltering relationships, we don't have much hope for actual purification, and that we should come to this position where we want to reach out and you know. So somebody has to understand how important this is and really take this up as a mission. And as I mentioned previously, for grihasthas, for senior grihasthas, it's such a wonderful opportunity to contribute something to the yatra. You know, often they feel a little left out. They've been around for 20, 30 years and they've done all the pujas and the cooking, and they feel, well, what else is there? How can I contribute? So that's the way. That's the way, you know. Especially if they've been around for quite a few years, so they've got already some wealth of life experience there, how to master so many challenges in life, you know, how to keep a marriage together and all these things. So, you know, that they are in the position of sharing and uplifting and guiding and so on. So for them, it's such a good mission, you know. And I'm sure you must have some couples like this. Huh? Yes, some stable, nice, serious grihastha couples. And they might not qualify in all regards, but, you know, such a mission can qualify them more. It gives them some incentive. Oh yeah, wow, so there's something here for me, what I can actually do. And they can feel, just by attending such a program every week, they will feel, oh, this is actually enlivening. You know, this actually gives me something. Yes, yes.
Example of sheltering relationship also in Bhagavad Gita, or is just this sheltering relationship?
Krishna and Arjuna, you know.
But this is not something that is necessary for a Kali Yuga age, or it was all the time sheltering relationships in a like.
Yeah, I mean, in spiritual culture, this is the most natural thing on earth, that the senior reaches out affectionately to the juniors, and the juniors, you know, inquire from the seniors and offer service. There's nothing more natural than that. Really, so, I mean, you see it, you don't even have to go back to Bhagavad Gita, just going to India or Bangladesh, you see it's all going on informally. I remember many years ago when I was in Melbourne doing some medical treatments there, I could observe it. There's quite a big congregation amongst the Indians, and they're fired up. They're, you know, boo, they're steady. A lot of them are Varna Swami's disciples. They want to have these sheltering relationships. So I could really see amongst them it was all informally going on, even though there was no system or no preaching about it, nothing. They just naturally, they had house programs, you know, and the grihasthas, they reached out to the students and you know, involved them and were guiding them. It was all going on. But then amongst the Australians, there was zero going on. Zero. I could very clearly see. And that's when I realized, it's really a cultural thing, you know. Yeah, so you don't even have to go back to Bhagavad Gita, you know. You only have to go to India and you see it's very natural, very natural. Very natural. That's the culture. So in Bhagavad Gita, they don't have to talk about it much because it's the most natural thing, you know.
Thank you.
Yes, Madhuri.
I have a question about mentors of the mentors. So where should the mentors look for their mentors? Do they need to look for a mentor who is also active in this mentorship system, or can be some other person who is not active? And can this be a person from another yatra, or what would you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, it's just an individual thing according to time, place and circumstance. There's no rules. You know, the main thing is that the mentors have to understand how important it is to have a mentor. And they have to desire it. They have to have a burning desire to find such a person and to develop such a relationship. And if the desire is there, then Krishna actually arranges it and somehow we find, you know. But if there's no desire and awareness even there, then we will never even see who is suitable, even though the person might be right in front of our nose, but we don't even see because we are not looking for it.
But this may take some time before find.
Yes, might take some time, yes. Yes. But there is a good chance, you know, as I'm saying, even amongst equals, I mean, you know, we can apply the same question on the level of the Prabhupada disciples, the sannyasis. So there we can also ask, well, how will they find a mentor? Where do they have to look? You know, and it, you know, initially, some 25 years ago or something, there was that idea there that maybe they have to look amongst Prabhupada's godbrothers or something, you know? So, but then they realized, no, amongst, you know, the godbrothers of them, the Prabhupada disciples, you know, there is actually shelter available. There's always somebody stronger than somebody else, you know. And I was sharing how Narendra Swami introduced Radha Swami by saying, he is my Lord and Master. Yeah? Yes.
So, if I understand right, then this the mentors. I mean, the whole system cannot go to the next step of opening up to like younger devotees before all the mentors have their mentors.
Ideally, yes, it should be like that. Yes, but as I was saying, you know, it also requires a bit of humility, of course. You know, if the humility is lacking, then we feel, oh, there's nobody here who can, you know, guide me or something, you know. But if we're a little humble, then we see actually there is people who we can take guidance from. So, you know, especially in a yatra like this, where you do, I mean, in Ram Navami, there was a pretty good crowd of people here, you know. I was quite surprised. I was impressed. You don't get such a crowd in Western European countries, there, Germany or Sweden or something, you know. Yeah, so I was, you know, I thought, wow, didn't, you know, many people just looking at them. They look like serious devotees, you know. So I dare say if there would be, that effort would be made to identify possible caregivers, and if they really meet once a week, I think there's a good chance that most of those caregivers actually find somebody in that circle where they actually get some shelter. It might not be shelter in all regards and aspects of life, but there is some trust developing and some sheltering feeling there, you know. So that can be one source of shelter. It definitely is. And then there can be additionally maybe somebody else in some other yatra or some other country or whatever, you know, like that. I mean, you're lucky here, you know, other yatras, some yatras in Ukraine, they're pretty small. There's so many temples in Ukraine, so many. I mean, some 15 years ago when I started preaching, I spent 3 months in Ukraine and every 3-4 days I was visiting a different place, and in 3 months I hardly could visit them all, you know. So many places out there with devotees. That Bhakti Sangam festival, there's 8,000 devotees coming and most of them are from Ukraine, because two weeks later they have the Russian festival with another 8,000 devotees there. So most of the 8,000 devotees at the Ukrainian festival, they are from Ukraine. So there's a lot of devotees there. So in some yatras, there's, you know, when they identify who can be the shelter giver, they find only 2 couples. So then they have a program every week amongst the 2 couples. And even that, they told me, this is such shelter. Yes. You know? So I'm sure in your yatra you will find more than 2 couples or something. You know? Yes. Anything else? Yes.
I would like to ask, in what way do we inquire from the shelter giver if they have a shelter? Do we ask directly or just look at their qualities?
Say it again.
In what way we inquire for the shelter givers if they have a shelter?
You mean how we ask the... Yeah. The mentor, whether he has a mentor?
Yes, we just ask directly or indirectly, or we just look there how they behave or if they have.
You mean, you know, that we should test or check out whether he's actually qualified or something? Yes. I mean, ideally, somebody else should do that, actually, you know, to make sure that person is qualified and is sheltered and. So that would be more the process amongst the shelter givers who are meeting regularly for a year or whatever time it may take. So there's somebody more senior, you know, who is trying to coordinate the whole system a little bit. You know, he should know the people and see a little bit, and you know, and he can feel and so on. You know, it's not necessarily every younger devotee's business now to ask them also, who is your mentor? Are you sheltered or something? So you know, this should be arranged there because they have to be appointed. You know, somebody has to authorize. Okay. Have your own group. And as I said, the meeting amongst the caregivers goes on parallel. That goes on every 2 weeks, and the mentors have their group every week. So the two always go parallel. You know, and then also amongst the mentors, it will become obvious there if somebody has some problem or he's going off the track or he's not qualified or something. You know, it will come out because they're meeting every 2 weeks. They have some program and, you know, word gets out, you know, if there's something inappropriate or whatever, you know. And of course, we have to expect some difficulties, you know, they come up. It's a whole tuning process of anattas for the caregivers as well as the the mentees or counselees. You know, some unwanted things will come to the surface. So it's good. It's good. That's what we want. Right? So some yatras have tried this whole idea and they said, oh, too many problems. So we stopped it. But that's the wrong conclusion. No, the problems come because we're not true servant. We have some other agendas there. So, and that comes to the surface. So it's not that the system is not working or it's a fault with the system. No, it's in our heart there, you know. And just that system makes it apparent. It's exposing it. Yeah. Anyway, it is getting late. So I do want to conclude this session with a quick personal exercise that you turn to your neighbor and you share what this whole seminar gave you. What did it do to you? Hopefully it did something. So quickly share privately. What did this whole week give you? Okay, Guru Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. I'm sure you have much more to share, but time is going. Do we have anybody who wants to just quickly share something with all of us? No big long speech, but just something in a nutshell, what it did to you. Somebody wants to share something with all of us? Yes, Prabhu. Where's the mic?
Hare Krishna. So in short, I was inspired by this seminar to get mentor, and mentor accepted me and gonna take this seriously. No, because I see that we need somebody to help us advance, and somebody we can report our progress to, and also we're obliged to do what we say we will do, and everything. I see this is helpful to spiritual progress, so I'll try to implement this in my life.
Okay, good. Thank you. Anybody else wants to share something?
Your seminar gave me a lot of frustration.
Okay.
Because for the, 23 years in ISKCON, I never felt sheltered by anyone except few rare singled out situations with people whom I met on rare occasions. Okay. And I felt they were people who cared, who listened, who were there to support, to understand. And I've been all over the place. I mean, all over Europe and India. So I was thinking, if I had shelter when I came, maybe I would become a really good devotee. So thank you for this beautiful frustration. It's not something negative. It's a bright future to look forward to. Feeling
okay.
That.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I have to share from my life that actually I have always had such a relationship. Somehow or other. I've always been subconsciously looking for it, you know? And I always had such relationships, actually. That's maybe why I survived. Yes. Anybody else wants to share something? No? All right, well, then maybe we'll conclude, and I definitely want to thank you all very much for your eager attention and your interest. Yeah, I have to admit, I feel very inspired seeing so many devotees coming, you know, quite regularly, really, over so many days, mornings, evenings, and plus maybe some internet viewers also. So this was very encouraging for me, just to see that here's really fertile ground for systematic, you know, courses and seminars. So, yeah, I hope I will get a chance to come again. And I am thinking, you know, if you have some interest, then I could also, whenever I come, even if I speak on some other topics, I could follow up a little bit with this mentoring, you know? Like in Zagreb, what's his name? Gokulananda? Govindananda? Yes, he has some interest in this topic. He really wants to get this happening in Zagreb. And he asked me that every time I'm coming there that we have some meetings with the counselors, and you know, it requires some follow-up. It requires regularly inspiration, pushing, and, you know, somebody who's giving some push, some inspiration to continue. It does require that. And I mean, I might not be the perfect person. It would be better if Narendra Swami would come, or Radha Swami or something, but I don't think there's much change for that. You know. So, but Narendra Swami started it in Hungary, in Shivam Swami's farm, near Vajradam. He gave the push there to start it. And I also went once there and gave that seminar, and then that gave people more insights and a clearer picture and so on. You know. Yes. Yeah, so I mean, I would feel honored to try and serve you in that way, to do a bit of follow-up and offer some other topics. I've got quite a few relevant systematic things which can be turned.
No, I have no question.
No question.
But I want to
say something. Okay, please do so.
Thank you. So, thank you for such nice experience with your presentations. I would like humbly invite you, because we have on first week in August this year, second Japa retreat in the mountains.
Okay.
For next week, we will, next year, first week in August.
Not this year, but
not
next
this year.
Next
year, yes.
Wow, 2019 in August, that's how far you plan ahead, is it?
Yeah, now is opportunity.
Huh?
Now is best opportunity.
Okay.
So that's
August 2019.
Yes.
Did I understand that correctly? Not this year, but
week.
Next year.
Anyway, Ananta Prabhu
let's
will
see if
inform
I'm still
you.
Around then, you know, you never Okay.
So this is
that's a tradition that it's every year in the first week of August, is it?
It's not tradition. This year will be second time, because last year we get this place. It's completely
okay. Yeah, I mean that's
special.
Good to establish such traditions, to have, you know, regularly such holy name retreats. That's very nice, because it's required really to brush up one's chanting habits regularly. I'm living from a holy name retreat to a holy name retreat, you know. Yes, okay, well, thank you so much for the invitation. I will need a reminder. I might forget. Okay, good. All right, so yes, thank you so much. I really enjoyed spending my time in your association, and it was very enlivening and inspiring for me, and I feel very encouraged to see so many nice devotees, and you can be all very, you can see yourself as very fortunate to have, yeah, such a nice yatra here, you know. Very nice. Okay. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Guru Premanandi.